Our first guest, and will one day be my last, I can just tell you right now, Mr. Michael Steele, the long-suffering chairman of the Republican National Committee. And all right, so, in full disclosure, Michael, I spent some time out of the United States over the last 5 days. I went to a wedding down in Mexico, and I tried to distance myself from the news cycle.
Because,
you know,
we were in between
states here, so I didn't really have to worry about, you know, were there going to be election results coming in or anything like that.
Right.
And on Sunday morning, I woke up and I went through the debate from the night before, and I thought to myself, oh my God, you know, when you get away from it for a couple of days and you come back to it, you realize this is more insane than you even thought.
Yeah, and that one was particularly petty. I thought it got low.
So now Donald Trump says he's going to sue everybody who's running against him. Now, what do you make of that?
Not much. I don't think, it's just one more in the series of distractions and you know, follow the bright shining object and that he puts out there. I mean, it's just, you know, it's like the whole thing with the RNC and, well, you know, they're in debt. And what do you mean by that? It's like, you know, it's just they're in debt because, you know, they're indebted to him and the agreement that they had. And all. So, you know, you just kind of go with the flow of it.
Yeah, okay. Well, easy for you to say because you're not the Republican chairman anymore.
Wait a minute. Let me ask you this. Oh, what else are you going to do, baby? What you going to do?
Great point, Michael. Rant and rave about it like we usually do.
Michael, here's
you're really not going to be able to do anything until the primaries come to Illinois.
Right.
And then, you know, you get to go and participate in that process. And then the general election, what you going to do in between?
I'm going to worry. You know me. You know me as well as anybody up here knows me. I'm going to sit there and I'm going to panic. That's what I'm going to do.
Just give him a glass of chocolate milk. He'll be okay.
Well, okay. I think the rum will curdle it. But anyway, so here's the point. We have a situation though, where obviously the field is winnowing.
Right.
And yet he controls this. It's a brilliant thing. I mean, I saw some analysis of it today that the whole idea here is he controls the news cycle. Like, for example, this morning on Good Morning America, you know, he floats the idea of the lawsuit. And then on Good Morning America, he says,
but are you going to follow through on your pledge to file a suit against his candidacy? You said you hired a lawyer.
Let me just tell you, with Ben Carson, what this guy did was a disgrace and people shouldn't forget about it. And he then wrote a fraudulent voter paper. You probably saw that voter violation paper. But he apologized to Ben Carson immediately after the votes were cast. Frankly, that should be taken away from him. That election in Iowa should be taken away from him.
And your thought on will he? I mean, could he actually do this? Is this just to keep him in the headlines?
He would have standing to actually bring a lawsuit challenging the credentials of one of the other candidates to run for the office because, as a candidate himself, He can make the case for harm to him, you know, lost votes, attack ads, all the stuff that's been going on in the campaign, that gives him standing because he is most connected to it, as are the other candidates, which is what, you know, he's been floating out there. So yeah, he could legitimately do that. Now, will he? Heck if I know. if he does, guess what he does. It ties Ted Cruz up into complete and total knot legally, and not to mention politically, for the duration of the campaign. All votes for him in subsequent primaries would be suspect, pending the outcome of any court proceedings, and that process could take a while. Yeah, I mean, it gums up the work. I think, you know, for Donald Trump, this is his way of, again, playing the game the way he's played it up to this point in business. And it's not something we're used to in politics, nor is it something we've ever seen. And the expectations, I mean, look at what happened on that stage on Saturday night. It was a complete and total you-know-what. And the reality of it is you look at the polls 3 days, 4 days later, and he's gained 3 points.
I know. Right. That's the whole thing of this. I mean, it really is the idea that people just, they don't care. They don't care about whether he's been philosophically pure, right? That was always a big litmus test in Republican politics, right? About, you know, where people stood on social issues and how long they stood for them. And they don't care if he's changed his mind.
This is not that election. Right.
Right. This is not about that. Right. But
this is not an ideological election. The Democrats, however, are having an ideological election. They're having an ideological primary. They are where we have been for the past two or three presidential cycles, where there's this ingrown frustration between establishment and rank and file over who we are and what we believe and philosophically how does it apply to policy. So that's what you see playing out there. Whereas we're at the point where our base is so ticked off at all the lies and betrayals that have befallen them over the last 30 years from the establishment that they're completely rejecting any sense of normalcy, any propriety, any sense of doing it the way they've always done it. And we'll see where they take it.
Okay, so let me ask you this, though.
Sure.
This is the craziest thing that could have happened to get into this is, you know, the tragic loss of Antonin Scalia, right? I mean, when a guy who is as firebrand a conservative as that dies right here in the middle of this election cycle, and he becomes the big test of whether or not a sitting president, I mean, think about this. I mean, think about all the historical precedents here, whether the sitting president really has the opportunity to name a new Supreme Court justice. If he doesn't, all of the stuff that's got to come due here between now and June, and there's some very significant cases in front of them that they've heard the arguments on and should be finalizing their positions on, including health care, things that really impact
immigration, abortion. There are several things right before the court.
Right. And so you could have 4-4 decisions on that. This becomes a really crazy monkey wrench that's been thrown into this. The president's going to speak coming up in a few minutes from Southern California, where he's at a conference. And you wonder whether Republicans can actually, what's the peril, would you say, as former head of the Republican Party, what is the peril for Republicans trying to block this, especially given the fact that they don't have their house in order presidentially?
Oh, it's huge. Oh, I think that this has been a complete and utter misplay by the political leadership of the party, simply because what you've done now is you've given the president the upper hand to play the card of, you know, obstruction and the country's business is that you can't go, a year without having someone on the bench, all of that stuff. Here's the way this should have, in my view, play out. Let the president go first. Constitutionally, he's required to. So it doesn't really matter what the Senate thinks or wants to do. Nothing happens until the president submits a name for nomination. Let the White House make the first move. We didn't need to. We didn't need to jump out in front and start blowing the whole process up before Biden was even cold. That, to me, was probably the most offensive thing out of the whole affair, was that literally an hour after the announcement that the justice had died, you had McConnell and others out there, political candidates included, talking about process, talking about what they weren't going to do. We're shutting this down. Mr. President, this is our advice. Don't send anyone. And I'm sitting there going, can we at least mourn the man? Can we at least take 10 minutes to think about his legacy and his life?
I felt that too.
Crazy.
I felt that too. It was instantaneous. What's this going to mean for the government, for the courts, for this case and that case, and who's going to be next, and let's talk about potential candidates. It was like, wow, it's a holiday weekend, and a man tragically lost his life suddenly. Unexpectedly.
Well, apparently not unexpectedly, which is an interesting part of the situation, too, that we'll talk about.
He had some health concerns, but yeah.
Michael, when the sitting president of the United States, who was, you know, he and the Republicans in the Senate don't exactly see eye to eye on anything, when he comes out, and obviously he's diametrically opposed philosophically to Antonin Scalia and has the most rhapsodic version of eulogy, as opposed to Republicans, something is totally wrong here. So
Thank you.
It's a problem. All right.
It's just really bad place. Bad place. Yeah.
it was. Michael, thank you very much,
Thanks,
sir. Appreciate
Michael.
It. Michael Steele.
You got it, guys.
All right, see him on the MSNBC. Also, you can hear him on SiriusXM on the POTUS channel as well.